Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
3 Comedy, art, and sometimes rock and roll. Let's do a public opinion poll. Raise your hand if you love creative control. 'Cause when Vish is unleashed, well, you... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just working on a tribute song to my favorite podcast, Creative Control, with Vish Khanna. My name is Matthias, and I play in a band called The Burning Hell, but more importantly, I support Creative Control on Patreon, and I think you should too. Quality long-form arts journalism is like a magical talking unicorn. It definitely exists, but it can be really hard to find. Fortunately for us, Vish makes it easy with hundreds of funny, thought-provoking, well-researched, and engaging interviews with artists from all over the world. Your flexible monthly donation on Patreon will get you plenty of special exclusive treats and help Vish keep his podcast well-fed and cared for properly, the way a magical unicorn deserves.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Sarah Houle and Shane Ghostkeeper are musicians, songwriters, singers, and artists based in Calgary, Alberta. Originally from Paddle Prairie Métis Settlement in Alberta, the couple met in their early 20s and soon began collaborating together as Ghostkeeper, releasing 5 critically acclaimed records over the past 14 years. Their latest album is the dynamically wonderful Multidimensional Culture, which was released by Victory Pool Records on May 27th, 2022, and prompted Sarah and Shane to have a chat with me about why they love living in Calgary, the theatrical nature of Ghost Keeper's music, and whether it's influenced by musicals or theater, how they connected with music and pop culture while living in a remote Métis settlement, the profound reasons why the indie rock of Pavement, Belle and Sebastian, and Fiery Furnaces, among others, opened them up artistically, parenting and raising children within cultural traditions and heritage, the cast of collaborators who helped make Ghost Keeper great, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff who will happily help you find anything you need. In fact, why don't you go talk to them about ordering some Ghost Keeper records, including the new one? Why don't you do that? Multidimensional Culture. Go to blackbird.ca to learn more about how you can do those things. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 695 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Sarah Houle and Shane Ghost Keeper of Ghost Keeper, with a very special guest appearance by their son, Finn, all with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
A cultural sculpture. Ancestors will sell you their mantra.
Hi, Sarah. How's it going?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining me on my show. First of all, where in the world are you?
We're in Mokensis, Calgary, Alberta.
Nice. I'm in Edmonton, Alberta. Just, am I north of you? I still don't know my way around this province.
Yeah. 3.5 hours, I think, north of us.
3.5?
Well, 3 when I'm driving.
I'm the same. I would get there in 3. Someone says 3.5, I'm there 2:45. But we do live in a photo radar police state. So I don't know. Do you get stung, Shane, by going fast?
No, it's been a long time since I'm pretty aware of my surroundings. I keep a good an eye out for cops, ghost cars.
Good. That's good. That's nice. That's good. Good thinking. So I pre-introduced you, Shane. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I know because I can see you that you're right beside Sarah. So you're also in the same spot. Mm-hmm. You're in your home. Are you in your home there, Shane?
Yeah, Balmoral, Calgary, Northwest, Central, yeah. Center Street, 20th Ave. It's a nice,
very
nice
precise
area. We love it.
Nice. Yeah, how long have you been there in that home?
This particular house, just 2 years now. But we've been in this neighborhood since we've moved to Calgary. Just can't leave. It's too convenient and so much good food and close to downtown for playing shows and stuff.
That sounds ideal. Sarah, where did you move from to this? Shane alludes to the fact that you moved to Calgary, but what'd you say? Or no, this neighborhood a couple of years ago. Where'd you move from?
Well, we've been in this neighborhood for the past 14, 15 years since we moved from Paddle Prairie Métis settlement up in northern Alberta. So we came here and settled into Calgary, big city life. Oh, there's a.
We have a guest, an extra guest on the show. Who did we just hear from there, Sarah?
That's Finn Ravi Ray. He's 2, so we like to call him Little Loudy, and you might find out why throughout this interview.
I feel like I have discovered why. I'm aware already of that. It's an apt name. I have 2 children myself. They are fortunately not here at the moment. So that's, it's not fortunate. I love them very much. They're older too. They're 10 and 7. I love them. I wish they were here all the time, but not during our interview. Anyway, it's good. Finn is actually alluded to on your beautiful new record. There's a song called Finn. Is there not, Shane?
Yes, you got it. And it was written for this little man. He he's 2 now, so he was born just before the pandemic hit. And he kind of had a bit of a rough go in his early days. So spent hours bouncing him around the house through his colicky and teething days, and singing and ultimately writing that song Finn for him to soothe him. And I made it on the record because we ended up needing as much material as possible in as short amount of time as possible. So this record just really ended up being a very immediate and sentimental record that we didn't even really know what we're getting into.
Yeah, I would concur with that. It's a beautiful record. Sarah, that song in particular, I've followed Ghostkeeper for many years, and I've picked up on what I would call a slightly theatrical bent to the songs. Like, they have a very, I don't know how else to describe it, but that way, theatrical. Like, it just feels like this could be, that song in particular, it could be like from a musical, I feel like. There's just a lot of parts and like a lot of like, it feels that way to me. Does that resonate with you, Sarah? Does that song in particular feel like a theatrical movement, if you will?
Definitely, yeah, I can see that. It goes to so many different places and kind of captures this little guy's personality too in that way. But it's also like a way that we've written songs in the past. I feel like that almost collage-y style of songwriting we revisited with Finn, but for the most part, I feel like this whole album has a bit more of a fluidity than we've done in the past, and maybe a little less patchwork than we're known for.
Yeah, I would concur with that. Shane, where do you suppose that, if you agree, by the way, you can veto or disagree with Sarah and I, of course, but if we can land on the idea that Ghostkeeper has and is a particularly theatrical band, where do you suppose that comes from, so to speak? Do you have any particular influences in that regard?
Yeah, Sarah and I have always been huge fans of score music. You know, cinema stuff might not be exactly theater because we haven't really ventured too far into that realm as an audience member. But cinema is a huge influence for me in particular. Starting my early days watching Disney movies, it's something I've always really appreciated. And also, it's kind of an artistic agenda for Sarah and I to provide our audience with something unpredictable. And so typically we, in order to provide that element, we need to make change these, you know, movements, as you would say, that typically you would find in cinema because they're following a picture and, you know, it needs to be dynamic. So I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that. My wife and I were walking back from dropping our kids off at school. And the record has been playing in the house as it's almost become a cliche on my show that I say this to guests, and I'm starting to feel self-conscious that maybe my listeners don't believe me. but the truth is, to prepare for these conversations, I obviously would listen to the record, and when I'm cooking and for the family, you know, it's just much to my daughter's chagrin. She just wants to watch TV. But I'm like, oh, well, Papa's going to interview this artist. And, you know, anyway, my point is this. It's been playing in the house. And as I'm walking to back with my wife from school, I says to her, you know what, that is kind of reminds me of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And she's like, that's it. That's what it is. That's you know that one song I was describing, Finn? She's like, yeah. And so, sorry, you're both smiling, so I feel okay about saying this. Yeah, I'm very cautious. Totally. Like, I don't want to put stuff on you, but Sarah, is that a keystone? Do you know, Shane's talking about musical, film, cinema, Rocky Horror Picture. Is that a thing?
In my like experience, in high school, I went to high school in Victoria, and we used to go to the whatever the theater was there, and like people would be throwing the toast and doing all that stuff. So maybe it's like it's just somewhere in the back of my mind, but I it's been years since I've seen it or gone to do the crowd participation type of thing, but I kind of love that you guys went there, that you drew from that one. It's awesome.
Shane, is that, I appreciate that it's not a direct reference to any particular film, or maybe it is, I don't know, but does Rocky Horror stand out for you? There's something about your delivery. You know, I've been engaged with your music on the level of, like, I really like Lou Reed, for example. I like the Velvet Underground. And sometimes I hear in your cadence and your delivery and your phrasing a little bit of Lou. But yeah, this is just something that, I don't know, it's like an American bluntness and theatricality, if you will. Is any of those figures or that film in particular resonate with you, Shane?
It's been so long since I've watched that particular film, but I've seen it multiple times in my young days. So yeah, they're definitely, and I remember loving it, thinking it was so cool. But yeah, it's probably there deep down in my soul. And
subconsciously,
right?
This is, yeah.
And definitely Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, huge influence. You know, just through admiration. I don't think I'm not making an effort to sound like the Velvet Underground or Lou Reed, but a lot of admiration and inspiration deep down just from lots of listening. And
yeah, and again, I don't want to put anything on you guys. It's always awkward. As you can tell, I'm a little cautious because if you're like, I hate Rocky Horror Picture Show. Lou Reed sounds like he was a jerk. I'd be like, okay, sorry, I'm being cautious because I'm sure there's lots going on. So I've given you maybe some signposts that I am picking up on. Why don't we, because it's an interview and you're my guest, why don't I do the right thing and ask you what you think? And so you can talk about where you feel you're coming from a little bit. And I think for those who don't know Ghost Keeper, it would be nice to actually get into the origins of this thing. So Sarah, can you, from your perception, talk a little bit about where this band came from, exactly where this partnership came from, and potentially maybe common ground, cultural markers, cultural artists or creations that you were like, yes, mm-hmm. we align on these things. Sarah, let me begin with you. Can you talk about the Ghost Keeper origin story?
Yeah. So we were living up in Paddle Prairie, staying. My aunt let us stay in her cabin, so we were just out there. Shane had been writing some songs. He was actually playing quite a bit of music with a friend of his, Bomber, and I kind of felt left out, so I wanted to get in on the fun. So I bought a drum kit from the local church and started playing, and had this cousin in Calgary, Shane Breaker, who had started this record label, Snake Records, and invited us out to record some songs. So we decided to make the move down here and then start playing in a band. So, but also I think being in Northern Alberta, you grew up listening to a lot of radio. So it's like, you know, what the station there had, Cryin', Lovin' or Leavin' program. And that was just all the country songs. But then the next, they would be oldies. It would be like, you know, and then also growing up with like, listening to maybe not necessarily full albums, but soundtracks. So you get this like eclectic taste in music where you're, you know, or me and my sister are pushing like play record off the radio to make our own mixtapes and stuff like that. So I feel like we draw a lot from that, you know, listening kind of like to an R&B song, okay, to a country song, to a, you know, like all those things I feel like are definitely still with me. And even just how we listen to our playlists now, it's like, it's not necessarily one genre at a time. It just kind of, you know, goes through a bunch of varied tastes. And I think that resonates with like the kind of songwriting we do.
I do appreciate what you're saying about sort of collage, I guess, is what where you're coming from. You know, there's not a consistency to your listening experience, like a compilation or something's going to change all the time. Shane, does that inform your songwriting per se? Like this notion of, because I was getting at Finn and maybe Rocky Horror Picture Show, those are kind of herky jerky things. They're changing all the time. They are surprising. So you seem to have this element of surprise that's instilled within you as a listener. You like to be surprised. Mm-hmm. So I guess it would make sense that you would convey music that captures, you know, reflects that interest. That's fair, I'm guessing. Is that fair, Shane?
Totally. Yeah, all my favorite music is, experimental pop to noise stuff. And all types of world music. So I'm always looking for something unpredictable. Otherwise, I'm bored.
Yeah. Are there key artists who you look to? Like, you know, Sarah was just talking about a few or things that you would hear on the radio.
I was raised on country music. And then I started getting into different types, you know, as when Nirvana hit. I was like 14, 15. And that blew my mind. And then I started exploring all the classic stuff like Jimi Hendrix and, you know, CCR and the Rolling Stones. And then, but I wasn't getting into music at that point yet. I was still like, you know, not really completely inspired to participate as an artist until later in life. And I met Sarah, 20 years old, and she started showing me all this underground stuff, Velvet Underground. And then I also, through another friend, got into Pavement and Elliot mm-hmm. Smith. And then that's when I was really inspired to contribute to this style of making music, which ultimately to me was just, wow, who would have ever thought of these ideas, you know, like just going deep and being bold, really being bold. Yeah. And giving an audience something they've never heard before, or, you know.
And like the Fiery Furnaces and Belle and Sebastian were kind of out at that time when we started making music. And that was like blowing us away. Like we would order records, like from the record store in Edmonton and like get them sent up to Paddle and like just be crazy about all this music. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to ask about that. First of all, I am a huge Pavement fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like indie rock is what you're kind of landing on, for lack of a better term. And the thing about indie rock at the time was that it could be anything. And it would be, on one hand, you'd be like, how did this scrappy band get a string section on their records or whatever? You know what I mean? So I like the endless possibilities of indie rock. Sarah, you alluded to the fact that you would order records from Edmonton. And I wonder about life on the settlement in that regard. I've talked to people who have lived in sort of away from major centers, and it's always interesting to hear how they accessed culture. I remember one of the examples that comes to mind is those guys, you know, Snotty Nose Rez Kids, the hip hop group. They were like, we never got to, we live so far away from Vancouver or wherever that we accessed live music by just putting this Dr. Dre live concert DVD on a loop, and they watched it so much like they felt like they were at the show. Were you so remote that you didn't have access to major centers and shows and stuff like that? Sarah, can you speak to that?
Well, coming from like going to high school in Victoria and living in Edmonton for a bit, we definitely had experienced a lot of live music and like a pretty solid music scene in both cities. So coming from that to Paddle, we would just, like, we would come to the city, we would buy music magazines, fashion magazines, and we would just like go through them and then, and like buy a whole bunch of like, probably we were buying CDs then actually. And we just like take that back and just absorb it. So we did try and hit some shows when we went to the city, but I feel like we always thought we would move to like a bigger city, like maybe Montreal or Toronto, and Calgary was going to be just kind of like the first step in, you know, our big world adventure. And it's so funny, like we stayed, you know, we got comfortable here and we got a lot of support here. And I think that like without the internet, you know, like when we were at that age, it was just all about like, yeah, the print, like we would get the newest Exclaim and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, try and get out like down south. But I mean, that's an 8.5 hour drive. That's probably me driving though. But it was definitely like something that when we went to the city, we just like, we kind of just like hoarded, got as much as we could.
Can I, just for people listening and myself, because again, I'm still pretty naive to the geography. I've only lived in Alberta for a couple of years, so forgive me. How far away is Paddle from Calgary, it sounds like, or Edmonton? I can't figure out which one it's closest to. Shane, how far away was Paddle from which of the two cities, and how often would you go down there?
Well, I suppose if you drive directly from Calgary up to Paddle Prairie, and then High Level, which is the town just north of Paddle Prairie, about a 20-minute drive where I was raised or went to school, it's at least a 12-hour drive.
Oh, my God. Okay. So this explains the hoarding. And okay.
Yeah. But so from Edmonton, it's so about eight.
Okay. So, and High Level is not, is that a bigger city? It's bigger than.
No, it's a town. When I was growing up there, it was about 3,000 people. It's up by the Northwest Territories border on the west, the northwest side, up the Highway 35, the Mackenzie Highway.
Oh, Lord. Okay. I'm sorry. I'll figure this out. I'll figure this place out. I just haven't. We got here, and it was very cold, mm-hmm. and so we didn't want to leave the house because of that. And then there was a pandemic, like immediately, like in 2 months, we were all locked down, couldn't go anywhere.
Wow.
So I haven't really done a lot of exploring. Like, I've been to Alberta many times and seen a lot of it as a person who lived in Ontario. And now I don't know it at all, and I live here. It's really kind of, some days it spooks me out. I'm like, I don't really, if I didn't have this GPS on my phone, I really wouldn't know where I was. That's weird. It's disorienting. But my point is, you're definitely sort of cut off, it seems to me, from culture on the one hand, but you made a point of getting it yourself. Is that the moral of the story, Shane, that you would?
Yeah, well, in terms of pop culture, I mean, it was serious culture up there. But I mean, same here. Once I met Sarah, Sarah was the first artist I'd ever known or I'd ever met in my life. She was a practicing artist, painting, mixed media stuff. And at that point, 20 years old, and it was on. Then listening to all this really cool, unpredictable music I'd never heard or thought possible. And then at that point, we were still living up there. So totally, yeah, we would come to the city and, it's like Sarah said, it's magazines, Value Village shopping, splurging on 10 CDs for the drive home and absorbing it all and listening over and over and over and over again when we got home. And all the long drives, because everything is a long drive, just even to get groceries up there. So music is very important.
I appreciate the distinction you make between sort of westernized pop culture and other cultural forms that are actually there. Sarah, can you expand upon that as a visual artist? And by the way, your artwork is always very beautiful. Can you talk about what the culture was like there and how that influences, how that influenced you at the time? And also, does it still? I assume that's part of your aesthetic still. But can you talk about, just enlighten us in terms of what kind of culture Shane's alluding to and how it's inspired you?
Well, definitely the North and where we're from is known for people with big personalities, like big laughs, lots of really good jokes. Like Paddle just has like their own slang. I think it still definitely influences me. It's been a while since we've had the chance to go home and visit, but it's got a really interesting beauty up there just with the landscape. And I think we did touch upon that in every album, but this one, especially with Summer Child in the Trees, just kind of, you know, that beautiful muskeg, those, you know, even those like crazy winter days where the drifts are like, you know, 5 feet high, and just that kind of magic of growing up there on and off for myself. But you take that sort of that land memory with you, and just those, you know, like still always teaching our son the basic Cree words that I know, and also just like, you know, razzing him enough that he can go to Paddle and take a joke, you know, cause like people are pretty sharp and pretty clever, but you know, often the joke's on you. And growing up like that, I think it has a lot to do with like my personality today. So yeah, it's a good place if you ever want to visit.
At some point, I will leave my house and go out into the world and visit things. Absolutely. I appreciate that. So you feel both enlightened and toughened by the environment you were in on some level. Is that fair, Sarah?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those winters are harsh. And then the summers are just like the sun hardly goes down. So I mean, me and Shane actually, as part of our origin story, I guess, we played at a lot of parties. Did a lot of cover songs, and Shane would play guitar and we'd both sing. And that was a big, big thing in the summer, sitting around a fire to keep the mosquitoes away.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, it's a good point for me to make that I didn't realize that I was a minority until we moved to Calgary. We were surrounded by, you know, equal parts, maybe even more Indigenous people, because our families are so huge. So yeah, it wasn't until I moved to Calgary that I realized I was a minority. So that says a lot about the culture up there.
Well, I mean, interestingly, you, like me, by the list of bands and artists you both referred to earlier, gravitated towards music made by white people and maybe didn't think twice about it. And that was the milieu I was in. I always say this. It's still true, actually. I didn't I was never really aware of my difference until it was pointed out to me.
Right.
Like by some microaggression or odd comment. I mean, I shouldn't say that exactly. I also weaponized my... I realized that I was different in grade 7 or 8 because I would get comedic mileage out of undercutting the racism by doing it to myself.
Right.
Which is like, I don't know if I was ahead of my time in that regard or if I was just so full of self-loathing that I was like, okay, I get it. But I didn't really dwell on it. It didn't hit me. But humor was a huge thing for me, is what I'm getting at. Like, I would undercut the tension by trying to joke with the white kids, mm-hmm. and it worked. They couldn't do anything. I was ahead. It was like the scene in 8 Mile. I insulted myself so bad they couldn't do anything. So I think it worked, and it held me in good stead once it was sort of, it was like being just establishing whatever school I was in and doing that. They were like, okay, we can't, he's already doing it to himself. We're done. Shane, was humor important? I feel like it is. I feel like humor is a big part of your aesthetic as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it. There are some very heavy songs on this particular record, for example, but is humor important to you as a means of your expression?
Completely and totally. Just even in the way you're describing it, is, you know, as a way to combat, you know, racial issues and specifically Indigenous on my part. I'm always trying to allude to an issue, you know, like racism and even historical, you know, awful incidences with humor, so that non-Indigenous people can see this issue, such as racism or the Oka crisis, and be like, wow, that is funny, because it's so ridiculous. It's yeah. so stupid or so dumb, you know, that we have to realize how ridiculous this racism is, because it's, you know, it's outrageous. Funny. It's outrageous. Yeah. That this is happening. So that's always been an approach for me in order to engage non-Indigenous people, you know, with humor.
Yeah. So one thing I'll say, I don't know how you feel about this, Sarah, but as I'm alluding to the fact that I could manage the world and my place in it with humor, as Shane's describing as well. Then I became a parent, and it felt a little more serious. Like, my life felt more serious. And it shifted me in a profound way in terms of how I deal with the stuff we're talking about, because your children have questions. And so it just made me think, oh, I have to take this a little bit more seriously. We can have fun with it, and we do, but I have to take it a little more seriously. Did becoming a parent impact how you and Shane sort of approach Ghost Keeper and the stories you want to tell? Sarah, can you speak to that?
Yeah, I think so, because, well, our oldest son is 9, going to be 10 soon. So, like, he has a lot of questions, and he's really into his Indigenous identity. So he's constantly asking us about, you know, colonization and settlers and, you know, like, this person said this, is that right? And, like, you know, just really being an active person in trying to figure out the world through the lens of a Métis kid in the city, you know, so that's definitely influenced just like some of the topics that we've explored, and just having him, like, even in like with the trees, having him in the video with us, where that is sort of the perfect example of taking an issue and, like, Shane's style of writing to really, like, point out the absurdities of racism. And even though I feel like it's something we've always done, having that you know, the eyes on you from like the, you know, having a kid definitely sharpens those things and makes sure, mm-hmm. like, you know what you're talking about. And he wants to know our family history. And I've just recently sort of went into that, and because of his interest in it and stuff like that, isn't necessarily easy, even if it's, you know, still like a pretty amazing story from your histories and stuff like that. But yeah, it changes you in like being brave enough to kind of go into those stories and histories and make sure you have your opinions straight, or you're willing to see their opinion and kind of learn from both sides.
Shane, did you want to speak? I appreciate that, Sarah. Shane, did you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I suppose I've evolved in my reaction towards, say, colonial issues and racism. Whereas, I guess before I was a dad, I'd be more I guess I would, I'd, like I was saying before, it's ridiculous to me. So I'd be more, I'd intend to if experience, because I've experienced a lot of, you know, racist people, you know, face to face in my day. And I would typically laugh and then even maybe like try my best to like make some sort of psychological comment about how ridiculous this person is and laugh at them and even shame them or something because I always had a lot of confidence towards stuff like that. But now I'm, when my son wants to talk about it or talk about racism, now I'm saying, well, you know, have some compassion because those people are in a place that isn't healthy. And you are in a place of progress. So these energies and these, you know, intense, I guess, hatred that they're experiencing is something to almost grieve over or feel sorry for them, you know? So, yeah, I think it's changed a lot that way.
I'm wrestling with something these days in that, I'm a first generation Canadian. My parents came from India. And growing up, I kind of rejected their insistence that we engage in Indian culture because I was living this split personality. I'd go to school or I'd play road hockey, mostly with white kids, a couple of kids from other backgrounds, was mostly with white kids, and I just wanted to fit in. And when we'd come home, they were really like, India, 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 you know, Hinduism, Hinduism, like just mm-hmm. very heavy to the point where I rejected it. Mm-hmm. And now I have children and I'm starting to realize I haven't really connected them with their Indian heritage because I spent so much time resisting it. So that's on me. I'm listening to your record and I'm reading the lyrics. I don't think that's the case for you, but has there ever been that, like you said, Shane, I didn't really recognize that I was a minority till I left the settlement and went to Calgary. So you have a different experience than me on that level, because I immediately was born and raised in a Canadian place. And, I was just instantly like, I want to integrate. I don't want to stick out on that level. Did you ever have resistance to your cultural history or just wanting to fit in? Did that ever occur to you that I don't need to maintain these traditions? I can just be who I am and try to fit in. Did that ever occur?
No, I was always, you know, pretty well immersed. I mean, I am Métis. I'm not, you know, full on First Nations, but I mean, my Ghost Keeper family and on my mom's side, my grandmother, I thought I was an Indian, full on Indigenous. And I was always so proud of that. And, you know, as a child, I would always witness my grandpa Ghost Keeper sitting on the front porch playing his drum and singing his songs. And I always thought that was so amazing and beautiful while the rest of us kids were running around and always, you know, lots of smudging and, lots of stories of medicines from my dad and my grandpa. So I was lucky enough to be really well immersed, and I had the strength as a young child to denounce religion, in particular Catholicism, where the rest of my cousins were having to go through the communion process. Mm-hmm. But where I was so into my Indigenous culture that I stood my ground and said, no, I don't like that. I don't want to do this. And luckily my dad and my mom saw in my eye this truth and this, you know, intense, I guess, feeling. So they allowed me to not participate. So, and then eventually in my teen years, I got to experience ceremonies and yeah. So being Indigenous, in particular Cree, Métis, has always been a point of pride for me. And I think that's also why I was so inspired by indie music like Pavement, because I thought they were really connecting with their deeper selves rather than the pop artists that you hear on the radio. So that's why I really gravitated towards that, because then I can really, you know, romanticize and glorify and express this pride that I have for being Indigenous, you know, as a modern Métis guy, as I experienced it.
Sarah, I want to ask you the same sort of question about cultural connection, but I also hope you can tell me if you think I'm either a bad Indian or a bad parent. for not. I feel like you would know. I get a vibe that you will be able to give me an honest answer on that. I'm joking. You can answer those questions. I'm happy to hear your thoughts. But also speaking to what we were just discussing, like, did you ever feel like pressure? So much pressure to be a part of a certain tradition or culture that. Because as punk, sometimes you reject whatever you're being told to be like. You know what I mean? So, and I'm not saying you're necessarily punks, but I feel like there's a punk spirit, indie rock spirit. There's a punk. There's an independent spirit. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So can you speak to that, Sarah? Like, did you ever have like, no, I just want to be a person doing this thing. I don't necessarily want to align everything I do with this particular cultural expression. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, growing up as a white passing Métis, I definitely had a different experience than Shane. Like, you don't necessarily look at me and say, oh, she's Indigenous. So it was kind of something I would have to tell people. And then, you know, you'd get the reaction sometimes of, well, why are you telling me? You know, like, why should you point that out? Because it wasn't necessarily in that day and age, like, something to be proud of, because there was just so much outright racism against Indigenous people. But my mom was... She was so proud Métis. Like, we went to round dances. We practiced our culture a lot. She's like a single mom, me and my sister. She went to university to become a social worker, got her master's, like, really inspirational woman. And, yeah, I think that when we were living in Victoria, I had that connection, but there weren't any Métis people around then either. And that's when I was getting into music and, like, getting into going to, like, punk shows and stuff like that. And then maybe thought, like, moving back to Pala would be, like, the worst thing in the world at that time, where I would be kind of going backwards. And I did see it like that, like, in high school. And I think a bit of that attitude continued on to making music, where it's, like, we wanted to be seen as artists. We had a pride in our Métis Indigenous heritage, but also, like, we didn't want to only participate in the Indigenous scene. We didn't want to be seen as tokenized or playing those stages where it would be a country act, then us, then the blues artist, all because we were Indigenous, you know? So in that way, we kind of fought back as, like, no, we're indie artists, you know? Like, and that I think started with, yeah, in high school for me.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at, because there is a certain expectation, even visually, that some of us present to some other people. I think I've told this story before, but once in a university, I was at a kind of a pretentious professor's house, English professor's house. One of these guys that wore the African dashiki stuff, but he was a white guy, you know? And he came back from Africa and he had some hand drums and there was some party and he knew I was a drummer. So he's like, oh, you should try the thing. So I did it I even felt bad about it. I'm like, all right, I'll tap your hand drum. And then his wife came in and he went, oh, hey, look at Vish. He's got the hang of the drums. And the woman goes, oh, well, you must have played tubla as a kid. I'm like, oh my God. Why would you say that? I was just stunned. Because there's just like, I'm thinking there's a line on the song Roly that stuck out for me. I'm tired of struggling to juggle all this baggage I've been lugging around. I'm inner peace ward bound now. And I couldn't help but just think, like, I don't know where that line came from, if it's just part of that particular narrative, but there is baggage, I guess, as we walk around and the way people view us. You know, I had a woman once come up to me at a restaurant and she's like, I had long hair at the time and it was the salt and pepper thing I got going on. It's like, oh, your hair is so lovely. I went, oh, thank you very much. She's like, we don't have hair like that around here.
What?
I lived in that town for like 25 years. I lived in Guelph for a long time. And I was like, what does that even mean? Like, what are you getting at there? So just like people see you and it's baggage. I never really think of it that way. I walk around and I'm fine. But then someone puts their discomfort on you and you have to deal with it a little bit. Anyway, sorry. What is that lyric fragment I just mentioned there? Where's that coming from, Shane? I assume you were responsible?
Yeah, sure. That's also, you know, describing yours, but it's a bit more of like, it comes from a more universal description of the, you know, the universal battle that we all deal with is, you know, having to shake our childhood in order to move forward. And that's, you know, my grandpa has always been there with me from childhood up until he passed away about 5 years ago now. So it's just an allusion to that, you know, being able to, having to shake your ego and all the habits that you learned as a child as defense mechanisms or whatnot, you know, spiritual, mental obstacles that you develop. And that's what that line refers to.
Well, there's some meta stuff here. Like, I feel like it's a very an outspoken record. It's a personal record. As I've said, it's funny. On the song Doo-Wop, you actually mentioned Sarah's name. It was Sarah Hull Lowry, Will You Remember Me With That Ceremony? Like, that's a very touching and sort of meta thing that's going on. What prompted that sort of idea, Shane? Like, I thought that was charming in its own way, but it also has a depth and a seriousness to it. Where did that come from?
Also immediacy. We were needing songs ASAP because we had the studio booked and the scheduling with the Canada Council for the Arts who funded it. So we needed a song, and I guess Sarah and I's history and our romantic history is always a point of inspiration for me, you know, to write about, to think about, to be grateful for. So I often go there lyrically. And this song, I guess, is a story about one of our very first dates. Sarah and I drove ourselves to Edmonton, did a little 8-hour drive in my pickup truck. And we were down at some park in Edmonton, and she went ahead down by the river and was blowing bubbles. And I thought that was the pretty beautiful thing. And so now I'm just equating it to it being a ceremony, as if she was saying prayers through every bubble for our future, for our romance.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Sarah, that you got to think that's pretty lovely. Come on, Sarah. That's pretty.
Yeah. I'm getting a little choked up here. I haven't heard him like explain it like that. So yeah, it's.
Oh, well, it's a very lovely thing to hear these expressions. So Sarah, just to clarify, I'm asking lyric questions primarily to Shane. Is Shane the primary lyricist in Ghostkeeper?
Yeah. Usually he writes the bulk of the songs, and then I wrote 3 songs for this record. And then there's a bit of back and forth in them too. Like, I've interjected some lyrics onto his songs, and he's kind of come up with a theme for some lyrics on some of my songs. So yeah, I just feel like he has a lot of good poetry in him, and I feel like I kind of labor over lyrics and writing songs, and it's something that I love to do, but I feel like I'm more a visual artist. So we split the difference in that way, I guess, where I'm happy to take the lead vocal on a few songs that I've come up with. But as for immediacy and stuff, Shane was really able to pull it off and get some amazing songwriting in such a short time. So for this record in particular.
Yeah, when I hear you sing your songs and then I think about what you're saying, I find that it's a bit more stark than what Shane's doing. It feels more impressionistic as well. Like, you use your voice more in a textured way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that's an aesthetic choice you make. I feel like Shane's voice is so high in the mix and very, all the words are very articulated. Yours is a bit, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking like grassy plains or something. Like, I'm like, oh, I have to dig a bit deeper here. And it's a little more, it's indirect, but it's also very affecting. Does that make sense? Sorry, I'm just telling you, this is all about me today. I'm just telling you what I think. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Yeah. No, I see what you mean. Like, I feel like I'm trying to, my big, I think, point is I'm trying to give the listener an experience of nostalgia. And so through either my references or just painting sort of a picture or an image, like, I feel like that's trying to guide the viewer into imagining a scene that feels like it, you know, it was shot on 16 mil or something, I guess. In a way.
Yeah. Gauzy. It has a gauzy.
Right.
You can almost feel the song. Yeah. I can relate to that. So with relative objectivity, I want to ask you where you think each other's songs may be going, or if you can feel like underlying themes on this record, because I pick up on some. I've alluded to some. I feel like there's family, there's tradition, there's speaking to white people, there's speaking to some hard and heavy issues, as well as very sort of fun, familial things. If you could encapsulate where you think Shane's coming from, Sarah, on some of on the material on this record, where do you think, do you have a sense of where it's sort of coming from and maybe what he's getting to?
Yeah, I feel like Shane really like got so expressive in his vocals on this that it was almost it's good medicine what he's doing. Like he's got that energy, and even if the vocal part isn't a lyric, he's still saying some kind of a prayer or kind of giving that kind of blessing. And I feel like that's the theme through what he accomplished in this record. And the songs are really anthemic in that way, where you know, it's a graciousness. It's a spiritual prayer. I guess that's what I feel when I hear the theme throughout the songs he's written.
I appreciate that. So Shane, I want to defer to you both to speak to Sarah's impression of where you're coming from, but also again, to sort of speak to where you think Sarah's coming from with some of these songs. Cause I think I don't want to suggest they're not equally evocative. I just feel like I have to, it's a little more cinematic to allude to something we've discussed earlier, but sorry, Shane, what do you make of Sarah's take on what you came up with?
Oh yeah. Well, I appreciate it. That's for sure. That's such a huge compliment coming from one of my most admired artists. and yeah, I suppose that is an underlying concept for me about, you know, putting out some good medicine, whether it's even sarcasm. I'm still having a good intent behind it. And, yeah, wow, that's a great compliment. And, I suppose it's true. I'm trying to put some good vibes out there.
I like this. I like that me intervening in your lives has taught you about each other. That's probably good. We should do this every week.
Yeah.
Why don't we just have a meeting?
And kind of like marriage counseling.
I'm kidding. No. I don't want to get into that. That sounds too heavy. All I'm getting at really is I think it's a really beautiful sounding multi-layered record. You are not the only ones on this record. Shane, who else participated in the making of this album?
Well, we're so lucky and we start this relationship, this musical collaboration on the last record, which we recorded at home with Ryan Bourne, multi-instrumentalist. So we're talking about immediacy. Like we couldn't have pulled this off so quick if it wasn't for Ryan.
Yeah.
His ideas, his hooks, his nonstop flow of instrumental hooks is just amazing, and we're so inspiring. He really pushes me and Sarah to want to be better at our own instruments. And of course, Eric Hamlin, like, wow, what a, we really needed to figure out, we wanted to, cause Sarah's getting so busy with her visual arts career that once she became pregnant, it just didn't make sense to keep trying to, you know, slay it on the drum kit, because she needed to focus on delivering her beautiful, sweet vocals. Mm-hmm. And so we together, Sarah and I, decided that we would invite a drummer. And Eric has always been my most favorite drummer in the city, if not in the country. So we asked him, and he was excited to join us, to be a part of it. And we're so grateful. His drumming is an inspiration.
And Jay? Our old band member Jay Crocker, who moved out east, he did some guitar parts for the record, also just long distance, and wrote the string parts, which were performed by Jesse Zubot, which was really cool. We had a choir. It was just like, yeah, Laurie Matheson like did a lot of work with us on backup vocals. He just really has a knack for harmonies, and so working with all of those like heavy hitters, I think I should say, it was a really good experience, and just like really put our trust in them. I think that it was like our most collaborative effort so far with working with all those mentioned names.
Yeah, I also was going to get to Laurie Matheson being our producer. He really put in a lot of passion and dedication to this record, not only as the an engineer, the recording engineer, but also Laurie's been a huge part of our history. I call him my big brother, and he's my musical big brother. And he's there to make sure that my vision, Sarah's vision, comes to fruition. And in doing so, he adds a lot of his own magic and individual sound as well. And this record ended up sounding nothing like what we were hoping it would sound like, and in a good way. We were so gratefully surprised with Laurie's magic that he put on this. And I couldn't have delivered these vocals without him.
Wow. Well, I love the fact that you've got this community of people helping you. That sounds amazing. I was just going to mention that of the people you mentioned, I can verify that Jay Crocker is a genius and former, you know, past guest on the show. And there's actually a new Joyful Talk record
out
in the world as well. So just wanted to shout out Jay in particular because he's a magical fellow is what I was getting, all I wanted to get at there. So anyway, you should be very proud, if I may, for what it's worth to hear it from me. You should be very proud of this record. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
So, you're welcome. Sarah, where can people go to learn more about this album and also Ghostkeeper?
We're at Bandcamp at Ghostkeeper Music. Not Bandcamp. What's it called? We're on Instagram. at Ghostkeeper Music. And I'm trying to put all the info up there, link it up. We'll have a website soon. And then we also have our Bandcamp page that people can listen. You can order vinyl. We just got our cassettes in yesterday, so we have a bunch of cassettes.
T-shirts.
And T-shirts. Stuff to get out in the world. Actual physical copies, which is exciting for us. Yeah, Baby Blue Vinyl coming out soon, hopefully. But I think those are our major channels right now for information. And there's Facebook too. We're on Facebook as Ghostkeeper.
Yeah. As well as Victory Pool, who were so lucky to get behind this record. We ended up joining forces with them last fall for the first single, Grassy Plains, and it's been a fun ride. Jesse Northey is, I don't know how he does it, but he's a workhorse, and he's doing great work for us. He's managing quite a handful of bands, and it's great to see, and we're really excited to be on such a young a new label and to grow with it. And it's a great name, Victory Pool.
Victory Pool, absolutely. Well, lovely. That's lovely to hear. And Shane, I assume there are some tour dates coming, I'm guessing, as we're speaking. Is that right?
Yeah, not exactly tour, more like one-offs. We have Sled Islands. Oh, we have our album release party tonight at the Palomino. I can never keep track of shows. We got so much going on, but... Folk on the Rocks up in Yellowknife, which should be really fun. Did I say Sled Island?
Yeah. More to come.
Yeah, more at this come. Point, we're just kind of going by invite only. We're thinking about maybe organizing a fall tour out east in the works.
Excellent. Well, again, whatever we can do to spread the word about multidimensional culture and Ghostkeeper, I'm happy to help and do. So I'll link to all of the things you said in the podcast description so people can click on things and follow things and all those sorts of fun activities. If we can go out on a song from this record, I wonder if we can pick one. Now we have two of you here, so I'm gonna go to Sarah to pick, but Shane, you have veto power. If you disagree with the choice, you can intervene and we'll have a minor, I hope, small debate. Sarah, what song would you like people to hear from this new record?
There's between two, but I'm going to go with Ancestral.
Okay. First of all, explain yourself. Make your case. Why that song?
I feel like it speaks to a lot of what we've covered in the interview about where we're going with this this album and the themes. And I just really like it. It's a single out right now in the States on their college radio circuit, and I feel like it could use a little North of the Border exposure. So,
okay. So the choice was Ancestral. Shane, where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I like where we went instrumentally with Ancestral. It's one of my favorites, for sure. Just a bit more of that unusual, song structure and guitar composition. It's a definitely direction that I think we're going to move forward a lot with. or at least like a prominent tangent. But I think I would like to deliver something a little bit with Sarah and I both singing, which is doo-wop. And it's
that was my second choice. Yeah.
And I guess,
wow, this is unprecedented. We never had a veto, but then consensus on the veto. I've never seen that before. You are clearly in love and know how to deal with one another. So you want to veto Ancestral and go to doo-wop. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Well, that's at least my suggestion. I've never been a veto kind of a person. Yeah. That would just
let's do it.
Be my pick.
Okay. Doo-wop starts the record, right? Doo-wop
starts the record, and it's not a single. And I wished it was a single, but I got vetoed by the band and went with Rolly instead. I mean, I love Rolly, but I want a doo-wop to be a single just to kind of encapsulate the underlying romance that, you know, directed this record. And both Sarah and I sing on it, and we both wrote together on it. It's a collaboration.
This is so complicated. It's not complicated because Sarah, you've already acknowledged you're fine with doo-wop. Is that right?
I'm fine. Yeah, that was my second choice. I thought, and for similar reasons. So yeah, I think we can go with that.
I'll tell you what I'll do. And by the time people are listening at this point in the conversation, they'll have already heard it. What I'm going to do is for the bed at the beginning of the episode, I'll play a little bit of Ancestral.
Yeah.
Nice.
As I do the introduction. So everyone has already heard a little bit of Ancestral. But right now, from the beautiful new album, Multidimensional Culture by Ghostkeeper, this is doo-wop. I just want to say, Sarah, Shane, Finn, thank you so much for being on the show. And I hope we talk again soon. And best of luck in the future.
All right. Thanks so much for having us. That was great.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you.
Go on now, call me on it. But you know well that I don't bend. Nothing ever come out of this mouth quicker than a rotary dial up phone.
Sarah Hulari, will you remember with me that ceremony?
Yeah, you blowing bubbles like a sage in a trance. Your wish is my command. Oh, don't look, no need. You know me, yeah. Nothing ever come out of this mouth bigger than a little white lie. She got a ceremony. She blowing bubbles like a sage.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Again, very special thanks to Sarah and Shane and Finn of Ghostkeeper for appearing on this, the 695th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you can't locate an episode that you've heard about, you're looking for it on that platform you like, the one you like the most, and it's not there for some reason, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, bishkana.com. Everything you might need to know about me and all past episodes of this podcast should be there. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter at bishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at bishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast and me, Vish, going. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, some of it derived from these fresh new interviews. Sometimes I dig into my archives of interviews that preceded this podcast, and I post those. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, you can message me on Patreon once you've made your donation, and I'll try to get you one while supplies last. You know, that Patreon, that's the main source of income for all this work I do. Otherwise, I just make the stuff every week or a couple times a week, hopefully no more than that, and I put it out on all those the big companies platforms like Apple and the Google and, you know, all those ones, and they don't give me one thin red cent, dime, I don't know what I can't remember the expression, but you know, I don't get anything from them. So, and that's whatever, that's what we've all signed up for, right? Just giving stuff away for free, hoping it works out somehow. Anyway, the Patreon's about the best way I've found to make things work. So thanks to all of you who support the show with a little bit of money on the Patreon. And if you'd like to support the show that way, again, patreon.com/creativecontrol. It would be nice to just do this all the time, but it's not looking feasible at this point in my life. So maybe I should... Never mind. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and place special orders at via their website, blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, both of those cities in Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie, who's also in Ontario. You'll learn more about Jim and all his music, some of which he loans to me for free at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Ghostkeeper. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a lot about that band if you don't know much about them already. And I hope you'll buy their music and support them, and also subscribe to or follow this podcast, whatever it is you do, and tell your friends all about it. Spread the word about it that way. That helps. And otherwise, I will talk to you very soon. Thanks again for listening and the support. Take care of yourself. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.